we're all grateful for this air conditioned room right now. So it is hot outside. So we're just going to take just a moment for Montana to do a call of attendance.
So as I call your name, you'll just let me know you're here. We've got Rhonda, Alberta.
I'm here.
Thank you. And Anna Swinka. Anna Thomas. Ben Trentleman.
Hello, I'm here.
Carolyn Ellsworth for Crystal Nippers.
Here.
David Alsop.
Hi, I'm here.
Thank you. Deb Tilley. Elizabeth Garby.
Here.
Holly Kingston.
Here.
Jared Lisenby.
I'm here.
Jody Zabriskie.
Here.
Johnny Anderson.
Here.
Julie Backlund. Katie Rickard.
Here.
Kyla Clark. Paige Checkett.
Here.
Simone Bolivar.
I'm here.
Thank you. Tanya Tom. And Tina Purcell.
Here.
We do have a quorum.
Wonderful, wonderful. Just a note that I kind of bring up every time we sit down is that just to make everybody aware that on our agenda we make it available for people to ask questions, make comments as we go. For those of you online, please make sure if you do have a question or a comment to raise the little hand. I got Montana right here to help me keep an eye on it. So I'm going to try my best to do a little bit better to stay aware of that. This meeting than I did last meeting. It's a work in progress. So just make sure you do that right now so that we'll do that. And of course, at the very end of the meeting, we also have it on our agenda for public comment. As we note, Carolyn is in for Crystal. So hi, Carolyn. And we introduced a few people at our last meeting that were new. David, you heard his name, David Alsop, I hope I said that correctly, wasn't able to be here last week, but he's online with us this time. And I was hoping, David, that you would just take a minute of your time and introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is David Alsop. I am the Vice President of HR at Ultradent Products. That's a global manufacturer of dental devices that dentists use across the world. I'm also the founder of a cause called Jump Spark that I do an event that's called Disrupt HR, just to get HR people not being stagnant, but actually thinking about the right things for the future, which childcare and the female experience in Utah is a big part of that. Actually moved back to Utah 5 years ago, so I've got a huge passion to help our state grow when it comes to diversity, inclusion, and that's what we're working on here at Ultradent. So it's great to be a part of this cause and this effort.
Thank you, David. Yeah, we look forward to hearing what you have to say and some of your comments to add to our committee. And right now, I'm hoping everybody has had an opportunity, board members, to look over our minutes from the May meeting. Was it May? Yeah. At May 11th meeting, and if you have, I would ask for a motion to accept those. Thank you. Great. Is there any discussion with anybody that you brought up? Okay. So those that are in favor of accepting the minutes for May 11th, please indicate by an aye or a raised hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. Thanks. So Montana, it looks like it's been accepted. Okay, we're going to just jump right in. You know what? I'm just handing. I will. This is part of my update. We have some new DWS logo lapel pins. So for those on the board that are here, you are welcome to take one. If you're not here and want one, let us know. I'll send one to you. If you're close, I'll hand deliver it to you. But there is a pen, a pin, not a pen. It's actual pin.
I thought that was a bag of candy.
I'll take notes. I put a pin M&M's in my backpack. I'm sure.
I don't want to steal your staff.
Okay, so that was Rebecca. And we're just going to jump right in to Rebecca's director's update.
Great, thank you. Well, I'm going to share my agenda item today with Elizabeth. I just wanted to set a little bit, give some background to what we want to talk about. Elizabeth and Anna and other advocates recently met with me and with some of our executive leadership team to talk about, now we're kind of seeing the end of some of this COVID-19 money. What is our plan? What should we be looking at? What should we be planning for as we are wrapping up COVID-19 money? And then also just with our ongoing funding and what should we be focusing on, and how can the advocate community help support some of the initiatives that we're doing? And I say, this is really probably a great discussion to have amongst the advisory group, because as an advisory committee, we would love your advice. We would love for you to give us some ideas on some things to think about, some direction to go. And so I asked Elizabeth, I said, great idea. Will you lead a discussion in our advisory meeting? And she said yes.
I did have COVID when I said yes.
Yeah, but she said yes, but she kept with it. So she and I met, and I said, our department is updating our department strategic plan. Our division is in the process of developing a strategic plan for the next couple of years. And so I wanted to just provide a little bit of context to what we're looking at. And it is not fleshed out. It's still sort of a brainstorm, a draft, and I will share that with you, hopefully by our next meeting when it's finalized. But I let Elizabeth know, and wanted to let you know some of the key areas. We really feel like, the mission of our division is to ensure that families have access to care, to quality care. That's really it in a nutshell. And the four different areas that we want to set some goals and to look at the lens through are similar to, if you're familiar with our department, cornerstones. And those are, we want to look at operational excellence. Are we using the funds, the federal funds, correctly, accurately, appropriately? Community connection. How are we engaging with this body and also with other stakeholders within the network? Customer experience. How are customers able to access our programs and to receive the support that they need? And then employee success. What are we doing to ensure that our division, our employees, our workforce have the skills and the abilities they need to carry out the functions that we are asking of them? So that's something that we as a leadership team are looking at and talking about and starting to make plans around. So I wanted to share that with Elizabeth, but don't take us too far out of that realm, because that's the direction we're going. So I'll turn the time over to Elizabeth for the rest of this agenda item.
Thanks, Rebecca. I really appreciate it. And I just want to thank the whole OCC team, because as we know, this last few years have been really hard on everyone, and you guys have not only had a change in administration, but have been implementing a lot of programs that not only were you handed, but that you had to quickly implement due to the pandemic. And so, thank you. It's been great. We've been having lots of different conversations, and obviously, we're all involved in conversations in lots of different spaces all across the state. And this group in particular, being the advisory group to OCC, really has not only the knowledge of all of the conversations that are happening, but really the expertise and knowledge of childcare, what's good for children, what providers need, what families need. And so in our conversations, we really have been thinking about the need to kind of bring all of those conversations together to make sure that we all have a foundation, because we know that prior to the pandemic, we were having a lot of problems already. There were issues that we needed change within our childcare system. the pandemic has really shone a light on all of those. It's also given us an opportunity that there was a significant influx of federal funding that was able to support a lot of different efforts and providers, as well as families. With those federal funds going away, I think at one point we were hopeful that there would be maybe some federal reform. That looks like a distant dream right now. But but if, you know, Congress can get its act together, we want to be prepared for anything that comes down the pike federally. We also know that we need to be ready to advocate for new things because we're gonna the system's gonna be in a world of hurt soon without us being active in not only collectively figuring out what do we want our system to look like in the future, but what's the foundation we can all agree upon to then build those solutions from. So in a number of conversations that Anna and some other advocates and I have been involved in, we were asked, well, what are your shared values and principles as you move forward? And we're like, oh, well, that's a good question. we took that as that would probably be a great not only jumping off point to also help guide OCC and what they're thinking about, but for all of us, if we have an agreement on something, to really guide any of the conversations that are happening across the state. You know that the Women in the Economy Commission, they're having conversations and they're making recommendations up. Well, none of us sit on there, so we need to make sure that they're also hearing from us, the experts, on what some of those solutions should be and what our baseline values are around that we expect to see in some of those, and also be developers in that so that we can help OCC as implementers, provide that direction to the overall system. So Anna did a first great job at
Be gentle.
at developing some principles and that a number of people have given feedback on, but we really wanted to open up for a conversation for this group around these principles and see what people thought. And I sent a link to Montana that she'll also put in the chat so that people can actually type in any sort of feedback they have. We can also put my email in there so that people can send feedback to me as well if they don't want to put it within the document. And then we can have a conversation here with a limited time. So timekeeper, whoever that is, please let me know on that end. And we just want, I think that as the advisory committee, it is part of our duty to help advise OCC on its direction, and this seems like a good place for all of us really to be able to move from as well. With that, Anna, did I, or anyone else, did I miss any laying the foundation?
Okay, great.
So the in here, I won't read it all, but it really starts off with the Utah's mixed delivery system for child care provides critical educational and developmental opportunities for thousands of children while their parents work and serve outside of their homes. Child care is critical public infrastructure on par with housing and roads. Without sufficient quality child care, our state cannot grow in ways that produce positive economic and community outcomes. The child care sector is also in market failure, with families and child care providers no longer able to sponsor the countless positive externalities created by this important public resource. Our current approach to child care is antiquated, unsustainable, and equitable. To best serve children and families throughout our state, we must commit to reforming and investing in our child care system. And then you'll see that they're laid out, the principles are really laid out, like a gobstopper, and I'll call it an onion, where we have the child in the middle, because the child really is the focus of all of this, and then it moves out, goes to the Center of Well-Being of Children, support families that use child care, support the respect the professionals who provide care to children. I'm having trouble scrolling myself. Integrate child care into our communities and consider potential impacts on future generations of Utah families. So with that, if anyone has any comments now, go back into that one.
Yeah, I like where you guys are heading. Some of that may be broader than the work of OCC and what we're tasked to do. But I do like that we are part of a piece of that mixed delivery system, knowing that it involves other avenues as well. And so I think as you get feedback and we kind of fine-tune it, then maybe identify what are the pieces that really make sense for OCC and what's within our stewardship of our responsibility and our scope to do. But, again, it's part of the larger picture, which I totally understand and see.
And I appreciate that comment because I think one of the things that gets lost is that, it is a bigger infrastructure, and if we're not thinking about them all as a whole, even though we each have a piece, that things get lost.
Yeah, we want to make sure that we connect and we work together so that we're not going in different directions.
Mm-hmm. And I would argue, a lot of this you guys really do consider, right? Like, we all sit here and we really talk about centering the well-being of children and all the things we do, and I know your work is to make sure families can access child care. I know providers invest a ton of unpaid time in supporting families with extra assistance and guidance. And then I think, on number three, too, OCC has played a great role. But I do really like what you're saying, Rebecca. And I think this is one of the problems that we've had with kind of like conceptualizing what do we do when all the money runs out? Because it's not really OCC's job to do it all, right? Like, it's got to be a little bit bigger. And luckily, we have a really good cross-section of people in this room who know what is going on the ground, what is already being done, what hasn't worked, what has worked. And we don't have all the answers going forward, but we can kind of, like, refer back to this. It's just like, are we checking our most important boxes when we're thinking about how to move forward after all this federal funding runs out?
We got Paige had a question, and then I have an online question.
Well, I'm kind of wondering, like we said, this may be too broad for OCC, right? But I'm also wondering who isn't at the table that OCC, that this advisory board isn't including, that we need to make sure is a part of this conversation.
Yes, that's a great question. We do have, we're going to actually have on August 30th at 1 p.m. if you want to save the date. So we're going to, invite other people, anyone who wants to join us to have a larger conversation. So,
And to your point, Paige, I think like one of the things that I think all of us have been kind of struggling with is, who does own this? Who is taking on this idea of like the bigger picture? And sort of, I mean, I would love to be contradicted on this, but we've all been working together on this for a while, and our experience is nobody. It's not happening at the legislature. It's not
small pockets.
Lots of small pockets of really good work.
Let's do this.
Early childhood Utah.
Yeah. Right. That's probably the closest we have. Yeah. And even they have a broader mandate than child care. Yeah. So it's kind of like there's not really a space for this big visioning around how do we move forward. And I see like from Tina's message, like there are also other different entities that are engaged in childcare in different ways who have a vested interest. So I think we're still kind of trying to figure out, Paige, like, who owns and moves the head of conversation, and it's probably not going to be super centralized. It's probably going to be really bolstering a lot of those efforts that are happening in different places.
Okay, and David has a comment. I'm not. Can you read that, or would you like me to read it out loud? I like the geographic indication. We need daycare closer to businesses along I-15. Yeah,
kind of like that integrating into the community. Like, we need to think about how to get it in the places where we need it. That's very cool.
And then, let's see, Alberta. I really like
that 1D states incentivizing and supporting the care of challenging children.
We really did try to take all the things everybody says all the time. So I know we've got representatives on here that specifically speak to this issue. And that's a big one, right? We can't, like, leave it for last all the time.
Another thing I'd like to kind of see is it feels like to me that there's the people that work consistently in childcare, like you have childcare licensing and also childcare, that are really part of the industry and because they had to have learned what it takes to be a child care provider and kind of, and we sit here for years and talk about these are the things that we need, this is what we've got to do, but we're not the only part of the picture. We've got to get the cities and towns together. We've got to get the fire marshal together. There's so many other people that are involved in this whole picture of what child care is and how to make sure it's safe and how to make sure it works with the economy. And it feels like we're working with one tiny section of the whole picture, and as we try to branch out and make things happen so that there's child care is more accessible, then the other parts kind of fight back because they're not caught up and up to speed to what we're doing. There's a lot of things that they have horror stories from 20 and 30 years ago that they're basing their own policy on that right now, not having any idea the changes and the progress that we've made in the last 20 or 10 or years. And it just feels like if there's some way that we could kind of get everybody together to say, kind of bring all agencies up to speed so that as we try to move forward, we're not hit with so many roadblocks of people that have such old, outdated information. Does that make sense?
So, I mean, Tina continued, I'm sure, with the freeway thing closer to I-15 is with inflation, we're seeing so many more families having to use public transportation. And that's huge.
Well, thanks again, everyone. I think that this is, we just really appreciate being able to have this conversation here. And, you know, we all care about kids, so.
It's not a one and done. We'll continue to have this conversation.
Yes. Love to continue to have it here, and then please, if you have other comments or things that you want to bring up offline, to you can email me, and then if you're also interested in attending that August 30th meeting, you can also let me know.
What? Can I ask a favor? Maybe give Montana that information. She has the group for the advisory, and we can put it out to our
this document. You'll send this out to us.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yeah. And then also the information about August
30th. Great. Yeah. To the support.
Yeah.
Thank and you. To answer Kyla's question, yes and yes.
Our
David's a really good example. They don't provide on-site childcare, but they're a private company, like grappling with how to provide quality childcare for their employees, and then. UC3 obviously is a great resource around the table for being knowledgeable about who those companies are and who's interested in being in that category.
Wonderful. Thank you. So unless anybody has anything to add.
I have a quick question.
Oh,
Rebecca. You mentioned that you're working on planning with your staff right now.
Yes.
What's your timeline for all of that to be happening?
Soon. So my team's going to meet after this meeting. We've been brainstorming really so our strategic plan for our division. And then we are going to be working in August with all of the divisions within Workforce Services to get those approved, finalized, making sure that we're all working towards it all aligns with our department division too. So I hope by next meeting, when we meet in September, we'll be able to share what our division's strategic plan is. Great, so we'll just move right on to you. It's still you. Great, this is Tonight, I'm still you. I'm really excited to, I hope you guys all heard the announcement yesterday that we have announced the Youth in Early Care Workforce Bonus for our for all of the 12,000 youth and early care professionals in the industry. This is something that we talked about in generalities last meeting, but we were able to work and get our application and our policies all in place to make the announcement yesterday. Lieutenant, for those of you that didn't get to see any of the coverage, the Lieutenant Governor came to one of our centers, Creative Learning Academy, and they hosted us, and she was able to interact with the kids, and she read them a book, and it was hilarious. Just so much fun. That was like the best part. I think kids should be part of every media announcement.
Yeah. I think every public meeting.
True. And then they were confused because it was like during their nap time. But then we were able to announce. So I wanted to give you guys a few details about this bonus. And I want you to share it broadly and widely with anyone that you know that might be eligible. So we announced that the amount of the bonus will be $2,000 per individual. We are asking that individuals they are currently licensed and have a current valid background check with the Department of Licensing, and that they work for one of our DWS-approved licensed centers, or licensed providers. And if you go to our website, jobs.utah.gov/OCC, there's a great one-pager that outlines it. So we're looking at centers, commercial preschools, hourly centers, licensed family providers, out-of-school time providers, school-age exempt programs, our family, friend, and neighbor providers. And so we really try to be as inclusive as we could with individuals that are licensed, or providers that are licensed and regulated. What's different about this bonus than some of our other programs is that the individual applies for themselves. This is not something that providers are applying for on behalf of their employees. And the initial step of a registration is to have an individual go to careaboutchildcare.utah.gov and create a registration. The application will be available July 19th through August 31st. It is a narrow time frame. This is being funded out of our CRSA funds, which has everything has to be done by September 30th, and so we need a time to approve the 12,000 applications. But between now and July 19th, we would love for individuals to go in and do a couple of things. To do that registration, identify what their background check number is, ensure that they work for a licensed provider type. There are specific roles that are eligible. Those include an owner, if it's an individual, not a corporation, a director, a caregiver, for adults, for those 18 and older, other staff that includes cooks, drivers, janitorial staff, some of the support staff. And then for minors, for our 16 and 17-year-olds, they are eligible for this if they are a caregiver for one of these providers. And so this application will be, we will send an invite to those that have registered with Care About Child Care, and they will be able to complete that application, and then we will review it, and then they will be issued a check that will go to them, and they can spend it as they choose. And so I think this is really exciting and wanted to share it with this group. Any questions?
So you said issue a check, so that'll go through as a check and not anything like a direct deposit.
Check.
Yes.
A
check.
I wonder if someone thought it. Yes, it is a check. Make sure.
It's like a little stimulus.
It is a little bit. It really is. It is a thank you for those. It has been a tough 2 years through COVID, and also with workforce shortages. And so it really is a thank you for those individuals that have been here for this time, those that are entering into the field right now, that are helping to fulfill some of our workforce needs. And so, yeah, it's a stimulus and a thank you, and we're really excited. I hope people are excited about it.
Yeah. I think I sent the announcement to my team last night, and I got all these pings. I'm so excited.
I did too. I had a staff member who said, you know, money's always great, but it's so wonderful to have been
recommendations.
Yes! That's so good.
And you know what? You're right. So the KSO, I sent that out last night, and they read the article and stuff like that, but it was just so nice because they just didn't feel recognized, especially during the pandemic. Because you just never heard anything about preschool teachers.
And that's why we
everything was K through.
Yeah, that's why we fought for it.
That was really nice to have Deidre Hendricks, and that really made a big difference.
It was a funny. She loved it. I think after the Scoy, the owner said, if you ever want an hour away from your job, come here and reach us. And it's like, I think need to take you up on that. But no, it was so great to have the governor's office and lieutenant governor there to say your work. Great. So that's the update. I did want to share with you a couple of contracts that are in the process of being finalized and fully executed around some of the mental health supports. As we prioritized or identified all of the supports that we need and that we could use the funding for, a lot of it was to provide some mental health supports for the professionals in the industry and for children. And so we have we've used some of our money in a couple of different ways. One is we provided some funding to the Children's Center to support their therapeutic preschool so that they have some help with some of their operational costs to ensure that children have access to some of those supports. The other, we are contracting money with the Department of Health and Human Services, and they are going to be providing some mental health support for child care providers and the workforce in a couple of different ways. One is that they're going to be working out some pathways and some ways to ensure that individuals can be connected to local mental health authorities that can help with some counseling, can help with some services that they offer. But I think what's really awesome about that partnership is that they can help. They are familiar with what other sorts of services are available for ongoing to help apply for different programs and different funding to help them to have that mental health support ongoing. The other option that Department of Health and Human Services is looking at is having a contract with an employee assistance program. So individuals would have access to 24/7 to be able to call and be able to receive help and assistance that way. So those are two things that are coming. When those contracts are fully executed, we'll be communicating and sending information out through our normal channels, through email blasts, and Department of Health and Human Services will be assisting with that. We're even going to put a plug on our approval notices for the workforce bonus because we have a captivated audience.
And I read everything that comes with money. A question about the mental health supports offered through the Children's Center.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us were at the Early Learning Conference in St. George, and they gave a fantastic presentation about their services. As we're sort of contemplating the road ahead and what the true needs in the sector are and the scope of the issues, do we have a sense of, like, their capacity under their current contract relative to the needs and requests? So do they have a waiting list? Do they ever communicate, like, well, we could double this in size and still keep busy? I mean, is there a way to get a sense of the scope of the issue and how much of that need we've been able to meet through this contract with the Children's Center?
I think we could definitely ask them to provide that and to come speak to that.
I have a comment. I just met with Elda this week, and they have opened up to Utah County. Officially, they have someone down there. So she brought her around to our centers and introduced their helpline, and some of my staff have actually used it, which has been very helpful for them,
good.
Just to have someone to be able to turn to.
Great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Good question, Anna. I can't speak that, so I will bring an expert to that.
Yeah, I don't think I had a full understanding of just, like, how amazing some of the services were that they offered in terms of, like, coming in and working directly with kids who are struggling, which is huge for providers. And it just seems like an amazing resource, and I wonder, like, could it be scaled up? Does it need to be scaled up? I'm sure there will be an ongoing use for it. So thinking about, like, are there programs that are currently being funded by our federal dollars that we need to start thinking about advocating for their continuation? Maybe with state dollars, or, you know, you don't have to ask for it. But to get a sense of that, so we can be asking for those really good things to continue and not drop off.
We do. I think it's Julie. Sorry if we missed you earlier. Julie, did you have a comment or a...
About some of the funding that's already, like, to follow up on Anna's line of thinking, on some of the federal funding that has already gone out to support, and, like, what kind of data was collected on that, and, like, are you going to have an update? I should just...
Not today, but yes. In the fall, our department produces an annual report about some of the work that we do, and we have been asked, part of the legislation in that happened earlier this year, asked our office to account for what funding has been spent, what are the programs, what are the outcomes for those programs to be included in our annual report. And so we'll be preparing that in the next couple months, and that'll be included in that report, so we'll be able to share something that's more inclusive.
That's great. I look forward to that. I think one of the things we were curious about too is like when programs, like when, if money went to, or the money that did go to providers, like how much was used for like salary increases and things like that we're now worried, you know,
yep.
A little worried about.
We'll be able to extrapolate that data.
Cool.
Hey, did you have a comment or question? This isn't on the report, but because Katie's right here, this isn't my news, but I heard on your advertisements for the Teach on KSL.
Yes.
I heard a couple yesterday and one today.
Yes.
Nice.
Promotional
event
for the next 3 weeks to get people to apply, hopefully.
Yeah, I heard it.
Thank you.
That was part of the COVID money, so that's why I wanted to just give that a shout out, but I heard it. Good job.
Awesome.
All right. Then we're moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So we're just going to go. We're moving on to Peggy Golding, who is with USU Price. She's part of the Care About Child Cares that have been coming and giving their updates. And actually, she is the last of the child care, the Care About Child Care organizations that have been coming up and updating. So I know I've appreciated learning about what's going on throughout the state. And so as we listen to you and stuff, I'm going to ask a question at the end, too, to see if there's any other organizations out there that we as a board would like to invite to come and share what's going on with them, too. So we're going to turn the time over to Peggy Golding. Didn't I say that right? Great. Welcome.
Thank you. I don't know where you are.
Oh.
I actually brought a friend.
Oh, I have another chair for you. Pull a chair up.
Actually, we could just ever just be really short.
Yeah.
But we're good, I think.
That's right.
Great. Basically, we're for USU Eastern and Price, and I wanted to let you kind of know a little bit about why we're maybe doing things you're thinking. That's kind of odd. But if you'll go to the next slide, I wanted you to see kind of the area that we represent. It's a little bit bigger than... It's just all of Eastern Utah.
Wow.
So it's really it's like 5,000 which is pretty good.
Wow.
And so when we do things, we have to go a long ways to do them. You know, like,
yeah.
Wow. So we spend a lot of time on the road, building relationships, And if there's, if you know small town Utah, you know that everyone thinks that they know everyone else's business, so we don't need to get licensed. We know who does a good job. We can go to our friends. We know. So kind of making that idea go away has been a really big challenge. But I wanted you to kind of see what we're talking about, because we want to show you some of the next slide and show you kind of what we're talking about. So this is our... So this is our region where we were at the end of fiscal year 21. So this is, where are we? Okay, this is Carbon Memory County. This is, it's Duchesne, Uinta, Daggett County, and the last one would be Grand San Juan County. So you can see it's kind of blown out. That's why I wanted you to see the bigger picture. If you see the bigger stars, those are centers. The little stars, those are family providers. So there's not very many. And if you look at this, just this right here shows you that we had started with 44, which is, again, not very many. 10 years ago, we had that many family providers. But we were down to 25. And we were hit really hard. But what's behaving us is COVID. People were retiring. We had a lot of people retirement age and, like, we're out. We're like, oh, great. And we've been trying really hard for... probably 5 years, we've really seen it at the ground, with sending out flyers, sending out information saying, we need new providers, and just people are saying, we'll just find other ways to take care of it. And so as I made the decisions going forward about how we wanted to propose our stabilization funding, we had just simple goals. So if we can go to the next one, I'll tell you what those are. They were really simple. 6 family providers. I know that sounds like nothing, but to us that would be huge. That's just 2 per area. It would give us at least get some word out there. We also want to get 2 new centers. Now, that was a big deal, too, because our centers have just been flatlined about 10 over the last 10 years. No interest coming in. We could go away, and another one might come in, but it's just pretty much flatlined. And I realized that I was not doing the best job by myself, because I didn't have the background or the time or the bandwidth to go out and promote people coming into our program. But I really thought that if we could reach this goal, we would want to do something we needed to do. Also, so we made the decision that we wanted to hire someone who had the background in marketing and in advertising and in public relations to get the people to reach out to them and get them in. And so I also wanted to have someone who could help. Like, I've been making stops, like, at, you know, mayor's offices and going to, you know, he realized there's like 7 communities we're talking, counties we're talking about. So we're at all these commissioner meetings and all these meetings and trying to build relationships. And they're all like, oh, sometimes you tell them there's been a problem because they're really interested. But otherwise they're like, nice to see you. And then we're like on our way. And so I wanted someone who could maybe focus more on building the relationships in those agencies as well as our community partners, like early intervention, Head Start, the schools, whatever it might be. And so, therefore, I present Corinne. She is our solution. And so we hired her. It took us a while to get her on board. And we found out that everything just goes much slower than we wanted it to. Mm-hmm. I always want things done yesterday, and so it's been kind of a challenge. But she came on board in October and has really hit the ground running, and we've had great... She'll put it out there, and I'll reel them in, and we've been doing really well. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to let her report on what she's kind of been doing to make that happen.
Awesome. So if you want to go to the next slide, as you know, all of our counties are rural Utah, so it's really hard to reach everyone on a large scale. So I focused a lot of hanging posters at the post office or at the corner gas station that the communities of 100 people, everyone stops there. We put up billboards. It's really hard in some counties, like Emory County has no billboards. San Juan County, I think, has 1, and USU has that contract, so it's hard to find where you can, like, go in and take it. So we have a few billboards up in, like, Carbon County and Duchesne and Uinta County. We do newspaper ads, so there's a couple of newspaper ads we've done. We send out newsletters to all of our providers that have information with the grants, and if they know anyone, send them our way. We can get them set up and all that fun stuff. So you can go to the next one. And if we want to watch it, this is a commercial we use in the smoothie theaters in Carbon and Emory County, or in Carbon County, in Vernal and Roosevelt, because it's really hard, to reach everyone. This is also on ETV 10, so it reaches those in San Juan County on the local television. We want to watch it.
Yeah, we do.
Do you enjoy working with children? Care About Childcare is currently looking for those interested in becoming licensed childcare providers and building their own business. We are here to assist parents, childcare providers, and the community by providing referrals, professional development opportunities, and resources. Startup costs and a $5,000 grant available for a childcare center in Emory.
Oh, sorry.
So
they're really
in Emory, as well as support and a $1,500 grant available for family child care in Carbon and Emory. You can learn more by calling 435-613-561.
That's pretty. So you can go to the next one. Yeah, they're super. We just wanted to streamline. So all of our billboards look the same. Our ads in the movie theaters look the same. So when they see even these colors, the OCC symbol, they know. They can associate with childcare. They can reach out to us.
I've seen some of these on road trips, and I'm like,
thank you. That's so exciting.
That is.
So this one is in Green River. We've got one in the east side and the west side of Vernal, one in Helper, one in Wellington. And through a company we have, it rotates. So they kind of change they're frequent. They change every 28 days. So it's nice to meet people that actually see them. So.
We'll get to that one. We Julie, we see your question. We'll make sure we'll get that answered here in just a little bit.
And we also found that we're scenic byways, so there's laws. You can't put billboard, there's like certain spaces as you go into town and out of town, and that's it. So we were really restricted. And we found that what the ad that just played, nothing exciting, but it tells all the information. We found out that radio was a really good way to reach our people.
Yeah.
So we have the radio and the computers, I think, have done well. And the billboards, people are starting to say, you really mean it? Because they've seen it enough. They're like, this is a real legitimate thing.
We have money for
it. Do you keep track of what things seem to bring the most?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great.
We always ask them when people call.
Usually, is it quite a few of them, or was there one that seemed to be overlying with everybody?
I think it's a combination.
Yeah, and it really depends on the counties where they're at. I think Carbon and Emory County is the radio. In San Juan County, it's flyers at the post office or at the gas station.
And government agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Their government agencies have been the ones out there just by bringing the business, saying, hey, we see there's a need, we'll advertise for you. We're like, okay.
That is a great team effort, Peggy. We did too. Let's get some more. I love it.
You can go to the next one. So this is just kind of some stats that we've had since July of last year. So we've had 16 people apply for our rural outreach grant. That's a $1,500 material grant that they can have, so we can help get the equipment and stuff for their center or for their family or their center. Out of the 16, 10 have become licensed. As of when we made this, we've had some more licensed just this week, so. That's super exciting. But the other six that haven't been licensed, they're still in the process. We're still working with them, getting them ready, answering questions. So we haven't forgotten about the six outliers that haven't been licensed yet.
You guys exceeded your goal.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Insane.
And let's just say on that center right now is 4, not 2.
Oh, my gosh. That's so awesome.
We've got several that are really close. And so, yeah, we exceeded our goal, and we're wondering, like, what do we do? Do we, like, try to keep, we're obviously going to keep it going, but we also now realize we're probably going to have to find better ways to support them. And we supported them through the process. One thing we found was we couldn't just advertise once they reached out to us with applications. So we're not telling you, or didn't tell you already, is that she is the one that has been out there on the ground trying to get them to apply. But once they applied, then we're going in. We'll see as I'm going in. But we're taking turns in our different people in our office. We'll go in, we'll make a phone call, we'll go in and look at their facility, talk to them about what they're signing up for. We'll pay some of their fees up front, because for a lot of them, if they need hand holding and they need money, because they just don't have what they need to just get the basic fees paid. And if there's things that licensing requires, we're not saying, oh, you want that? Perfect, we'll get it. If licensing is requiring this for me to become licensed, and so we'll help them pay for those costs up front. Which I think between that and helping them understand what it is they need and that they can do it, giving them the encouragement, I think those things have really led to the success. now we're realizing we've got to find ways to help them keep going.
Tina has a question too. It looks like, what about the Indian healthcare centers in San Juan?
Okay, what about them? We have a...
Maybe for advertising.
Maybe for advertising,
yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, no, it does. And we have, we've done a lot of advertising in San Juan. It just gets really tricky with boundaries. Before they can get licensed and where they can, which side of the river they're on. The communities that they can be licensed in. We do have a center coming in Modest River Creek. That's one of those that's on the list. So that's down in the Navajo Nation, but it's in a area that can be licensed.
I think we forget another country.
Right.
When you cross over,
right.
A whole different ballgame.
But, yeah, but there's been a lot of interest, a lot of conversation, and a lot of support. But, yeah, we do have a program coming in down there, so that would be exciting.
So these numbers are all brand new?
Yes, these are new.
Yeah,
new
brand new
since
Since last
July. Most of them are actually in the last like 4 or 5 months.
Yeah,
We would be remiss if we didn't ask. We hope they're all on a stabilization grant.
You know, we have been pushing the deadline. I think that's why the two were pushed through yesterday.
Good. There can be
slack.
Yeah. So that's why they were like, they were looking at, like, say, well, it's August 1st. I said, how about we are in business by July 31st?
Yes.
And so I think that was their push. And one of them has a licensor, you know, scheduled to come yesterday. And I called them and said, I think you should piggyback on this opportunity. So that's two and more that came on yesterday. So we're really excited about that.
Great.
And I've actually got a couple more inquiries about centers. And I had two applications on my desk right up this morning for family programs to call back and check them out. So they're finally starting to believe it. Mm-hmm. And it's in communities also that we typically are not welcome into, I should say, are welcoming us in. It's like, normally they'll say, like, I had to go to one and I was like, well, is the gate going to be locked? No, the gate will be open, you're welcome to come in.
This is such a good illustration of how each of the regions just have different challenges, have different... approaches, and I think that's like one of the reasons that these highlights have been so valuable. And I even think, you know, beyond the COVID funding, like these kind of updates help us to understand, what does childcare look like in Eastern Utah? What does it look like in the metro areas, right? Like right along the Wasatch Front, because the one size fits all just doesn't work in terms of the outreach, in terms of the support. I do think what you said, Peggy, they all need hand-holding and they all need money. Could be like the theme of everybody's efforts, right? Like everybody needs ongoing support and they need some funding. But this is such a great example of like the very specific issues in very rural Utah. It's just amazing what you guys have done.
We've been excited that they have been so receptive and so welcoming.
And what do you think the change has been when you say something's changed?
A couple of things have changed. One is, overall, the atmosphere in the world has changed. You know, there's jobs changes and the way you're working has changed. I think having someone dedicated to focus on that, to put the advertising, because when I travel, I've heard the flyers up and I've talked to people, but that's what she does. She goes out, she talks to people, she puts flyers up, she talks to the advertisers, and she gets, you know, and it just helps us. That's her focus. It's not just one of her 100 other things that she's doing. I think that's been the biggest thing, is there someone to focus on this.
Cool. You can go to the next slide. So this is an update of the first maps that you saw. So this is Carbon and Emery. So the blue stars are in process of when we sent this in. We got a few calls just this week of some. We have one out here in, you can't even see Orangeville. Orangeville's over here, and then one in Cleveland. The red stars are the newly licensed, so the smaller ones are our family and the larger ones are centers. So this is the Uinta and Duchesne region and then Grand and San Juan over there. And the two new red stars should be in Moab for the two new centers that licensed this week. So.
A dumb question, you may all know the answer. I'm curious about the licensed family providers. Are these individuals that maybe were providing unregulated care and have chosen to become licensed, or someone that's just brand new into the world of providing child care?
A couple of them were doing unregulated care. Okay. And we had a couple that were FFNs that are becoming licensed.
Yeah. All right.
We've been working on them, and they are like, no, no, no. All of a sudden, okay, we'll try it.
Yeah.
So a couple of them have been people that are transitioning over.
Increase their license,
right? And we've had a couple of family providers that are dipping their toes into possibly being centers as well.
Wow. Great.
So that's still figuring it out. Any questions?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we have one more slide. It just shows the comparison of where we were July 21 and then July of 22. So we increased by 7 families. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to update. Oh, there it is, yeah. 5 families and then 2 RCs. So 7 families and 3, now 4 centers. And then the ones listed are ones that are in process.
Very well. Here's one question. This might be, like, too complicated to know the answer to. I did not think that was a dumb question.
Thank you. I'm still new, guys.
No, I think that's one thing I always wonder. Are we converting? Are we recruiting? What are we doing? What are people doing for child care instead? So is it just like unlicensed or unregulated care is really common? Or
That's what we found. A lot of it is that their next-door neighbor, their grandma, grandpa, relatives. Like in Daggett County, license probably kick us if we got some licensed up there. But we do keep tabs, and we find out from them, talking to them and the government agencies up there, that it's all relative or neighbor care. And I think that's pretty common. You know, it's like someone they trust is close by. And so licensing isn't important to them because, you know, they're not getting state subsidy, and it's their, somebody they know or relative.
What do you think, Peggy and Corinne, about like the likelihood of converting any of those folks, even for a very brief time, to friend, family, neighbor? Like pretty low threshold, but they would be able to get compensated.
No, I think we've done that.
Oh, good.
And actually, the one in Cleveland, she's looking at, do I do FFN? Do I do license? You know, she's just making those inquiries right now.
But for people who are unregulated and just watching one or two of their family's kids, would they do that?
That's what she means.
Okay.
And that's what I mean. That's what she is. Yeah. One in Cleveland right now is just watching that she's not regulated or not doing anything. And so really she's looking at maybe doing FFN or doing a licensed family.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
One more question here.
Are you with Rob Walker?
Yeah, we're working for a while.
It's one of these centers.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Just kind of had them both at once. They got licensed yesterday. I got a call from yesterday about
4:30.
Goes, guess what?
He's a go-getter.
Yeah.
Existing programs to help them sustain their business over time. So provide training, materials, sound business practices. If they want to buy curriculum, we'll help them with that. If they want to buy an accounting system, we'll help them with that. And we finished our cohort and had great success, and we put out our call for 2 more sets of cohorts, and we our goal was 20, and we had 45 inquiries.
Wow.
So we're trying to figure out who do we pick? How do we pick them? Is it based, you know, yeah, it's really difficult. So we would like to hire another person, but I don't know that it's in the budget. But one success story, I don't know if you're aware of the Panda Center in Rose Park. They've been having a lot of problems with vandalism and theft. They got the catalytic converter stolen out of their vans. So we were able to fund the purchase of a security gate and cameras for their center. So now they can advertise that, or that could be a selling point when they do tours. And so that was the one big success that I thought we had with helping that one center. But other centers bought new curriculum. We got shade sales for their playground, pro care, those kinds of things. So it's been really successful. So I will look forward to creating a little slideshow about our successes and the direction we're going for the future.
And again, selfishly, like, extra funding for our regional care about child care centers, like, that's
yeah,
a good idea for legislative advocacy, because mm-hmm. it sounds like you guys are really just getting a handle on what it takes to grow where, and we'd love to get you a Corinne somehow.
Yeah.
If she has a Corinne up here.
Right now, it's me.
One of the 100 things, I think. That's
yeah,
exactly.
Thank you.
And you know, guys, I don't know where this fits in, but the Utah Parent Center has been making a lot of referrals to the live line for Care About Child Care, and I just want to thank whoever is helping our families there, because for a while, Care About Child Care was really hard for us because it had changed and there wasn't a real way without making like 50 cold calls to find out if people are comfortable with taking care of our kids. And so it's a lot easier for families to go in and actually have somebody work with them to narrow it down a little bit. So we appreciate that from the bottom of our hearts, honestly.
Around the COVID relief stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's go.
It's from Julie.
I think it was.
Okay. So, Julie, I'll read your question because about the workforce bonus, so I'll answer. You can hear me. I have a question about the workforce bonus. In reading the Q&A page, I noticed that it said that employees need to commit to work for 6 months after receiving the money. I'm wondering if this is a firm rule or if there can be exceptions. I have an employee who has been with me for 2 years, all through COVID, but she is leaving for an early admission in September. I really feel like she deserves a grant more than an employee who just started working this month and did not pay a part during the really hard COVID times. That requirement, you know, this money, this workforce bonus, the intent is really about rewarding people that have been here, and then also we just didn't want to see, after you get the bonus, this mass exodus of employees. And so we did build the expectation into this that your intent is to continue to work through it. We have the option to, if we think that's being abused, if we think there's this mass exodus, to be able to collect that money back. But I think with your employee, go ahead and have them apply, and then we can review all those on a case-by-case basis. But the intent is to keep people stabilized and grounded and in the workforce, and not to get a check and leave.
I appreciate that, because it's the ones that come in just for the summer, you know, that kind of thing. I think that some of us have been worried about, that we were excited that you said 6 months, because they're only there just to gain a paycheck for the summer and say, see ya.
Yeah. Yep.
And so that was, I liked that.
Yeah, to be quite honest. That's the intent, but we'll look at everything on a case-by-case basis with the application. Was there any other questions related to this? Okay.
No. So it looks like we're ready to move on. So we're going to go to our OCC updates, and Kathy's first on the list with the stabilization grant.
Okay.
So I just wanted to give some numbers. Last meeting, we had some questions about how many centers and family providers were receiving the grant. This was as of June. So as of June, we paid like $73.6 million. That's what we paid out for the grant from January to June. As of today, and this isn't there, but I know you guys are all aware, we did have a delay in the July checks. Unfortunately, we weren't aware of that until last Friday, so they were sent today. Hopefully, get them soon. But as of today, it's $89.5 million. So that tells you how much we spend, or you know, we're not spending, we're divvying out to you guys each month. So as of the end of June, we had a total of 922 current and open applications receiving payments. Out of those 922, 513 were our family providers. 388 are centers, which includes like the DWS approved exempt centers as well. There's 14 residential certificates and 7 commercial preschools. And then just a reminder, last day to apply for the stabilization grant is July 31st. Do you guys have any questions? Comments?
I can make a comment that it's been extremely helpful, especially with the increase in wages. There's no way we could have put the wages up, and it's taken off a lot of stress because we were able to increase. Our numbers are starting to get back down to not having the turnover like it was. Mm-hmm. So that's been really, really helpful. We need to figure out what we're doing long term.
Yeah, in the new year.
It's going to start hitting families.
It is.
If it's not going to hit somewhere else, it's got to hit the families, and mm-hmm. that needs to be a, really on the forefront of our minds.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree, and I think this is kind of relates to Elizabeth's question from earlier. So maybe this is already being contemplated for the annual report and the funding update to the legislature, but I would be really curious to see specifically, like, whatever information, of course, like de-identified for everything, what those stabilization grants have paid for, and what sort of changes in pay we can see based on the information we've gotten from people who've received stabilization grants. I know when Dr. Ruchlin was here last time talking about the cost of care study, one of the concerns was that the cost of the workforce was going to be really understated because it was like really pre-COVID survey numbers. This could give us a good snapshot of what, like how much of providers' expenses are going to workforce now, but before we do the full market rate survey for the next round of things. So I would be really curious to see. And obviously, I have never submitted a stabilization grant application before, so I don't know everything that it entails. But I imagine there's a good deal of really great information that these providers have been willing to share. And I think there's a lot of good information, especially on wages and how much more they're spending on wages now than they were spending before the pandemic began. Because I agree with Jody, like, there's only two people in the equation to absorb the cost. It's either going to be the provider, which I think they're probably at capacity for cost absorption, or the families. They're also at capacity for cost absorption. So when we're talking about larger scale advocacy, like what do we need to actually make our child care system work and fair to the people who are running it? Like, $160 million is probably pretty close to what we should be asking for, right? I mean, it's kind of crazy to think about, but I would love to see the spending by providers broken down to the extent that it's appropriate for us to understand how this has changed, especially around employee wages.
Shannon, for the celibate, you know, kind of filled me in. There may be, I think we can provide information about how that was spent.
there are some holes in what we've collected because I think especially around like wages and personnel costs, we're only collecting that every month for those that opted into that enhanced payment. And
okay.
So there may be some individuals or providers that are using it for personnel, but they're not, the majority of their staff aren't above $15 an hour, so we aren't receiving that payroll record. But we have built in with the workforce bonus, we have built in a lot of questions that we're asking. It's optional, but we really want people, we have people have to answer to not answer, optional not answer, but we are asking some questions about that, like what is your current rate, what is your current wage, what are some of the benefits you get. We feel like this is an opportunity with our workforce bonus and having a lot of people apply to gather a lot of demographic information that it may be hard to compare and contrast before, but at least I think will get us a little bit of what you're looking for.
And you can get who has had the enhanced payment and kind of get where we are there and the percentage here and how many are actually taking the enhanced, that would be extremely beneficial because then you can say they're starting on the benchmark of 15 and going off.
Yeah.
So you'll have some really good ones.
I think we'll have some data. How it's all, being able to compare trust, I think may be difficult.
And that would be good because I know with me, I chose not the enhanced, even though I did raise my minimum wage to $15 an hour and was able to take care of the staff that have been with me all along. I was able to do that. Now, there was no way I'd be able to maintain that had it not been for the amount of money that.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're all thinking about July of next, you know, trying to prepare for the last check that we received, what, in September. So we're all really concerned about that. But I was too afraid to kind of depend on that extra, because it looked good. It did, but.
Yeah, I think we are working on that, specifically to what you said, Jody, on who is receiving the enhanced payment, looking at what the percentage of those, you know, with the payroll and what they are. And it is kind of all over the place. There's some that hover right at that 61%, and if they lose somebody, they drop, and, you know, and then there are some like you that everybody's over, and it makes it very easy, you know, to manage that. But it's all over the board, you know. It'll be interesting too, because as of July 31st, there's no more of that opting in for that enhanced rate too. So that'll be interesting to see too, how many people kind of stay, drop them lower, or if they actually like commit and say, okay, this is where we're going to be. So we'll see that.
The other thing that's going to be kind of skewed is we're not reporting actual numbers. We're reporting up to the amount that you're
exactly.
So you're not reporting everything because it doesn't cover all my payroll.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Up here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we're not
going to be able to
whole
see.
Operating expense.
Yeah, you're not going to see the whole entire poodle, you know.
And that reminds me of a question that I wanted to ask. So I've had quite a few providers reach out to me saying, you know, I'm not quite sure how to do my reporting because I bought something and the receipt says I spent $100, but I only needed $28 to finish out the rest of the grant funds, right? And so I've been telling them, just do up to what you used, and then if you get audited, you just write on the receipt, I only used $28 of this to go to that. I've been, and I hope I'm not speaking out of what actually should happen, but I've been telling them that the reporting that they do kind of gets put into a big database so that you guys can kind of keep track of where money's going, and that when they over-report, then it kind of messes up your numbers and you have to go through and adjust those yourselves, and it kind of makes your job harder, right?
And what they're reporting is reported directly to the federal
government.
So they have questions, oh, if somebody received this much money, and yet they're reporting this much money, you know, in reality they only use the grant portion, right? But it looks like, you know, and so there is that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So I'll keep telling people
great,
that if that's okay. I just didn't want to spread misinformation.
That's great.
So I think with that, let's keep records, like right on the receipt. $28 was for this, for the grant, the rest of it was from this, because when those get reviewed and audited, then it's going to be, they're not going to remember, like, oh, what did I do in September of 2021? Yeah, they can, it'll be clear for
the record. To make sure to write it down on the receipt, so that's, because I'm assuming audits come not always, you know, right after it happens, so you might need to go back to it up to 6 months later or even possibly longer, so make sure you have a really good paper trail.
And with the other grants that, like, maintenance group is doing, you know, they can't be used for the same thing, and so that's an easy, you know, we've heard a lot of questions like that. Oh, I misreported because I got this grant, and I was able to use that here, and so I needed to change things, you know.
We might need to use some of this money to hire an accountant to help us keep track of everything, or a tax attorney.
That's an eligible cost.
That's what I'm recommending. I just wanted to also say another thing we've been talking about a little bit, and it's in the works, but we have a long list of reports that we've asked for from our data folks. But one of the things that we're starting to look at is how, if at all, enrollments have changed since the stabilization grant was released. It is self-reported, but we do ask for it every single month, and so we're starting to pull that to look at. What was their enrollment at application, and has it stabilized, has it increased, what sort of happened over time? So we're really excited to see that data, too. We hope that it's at least been stable, if not increased, you know, for people who maybe had closed classrooms or stuff like that before. So we're excited for that.
It's been helpful, too, because we can give more scholarships to families that couldn't. And so I know that we've been able to increase, and through this time I've taken over centers, and I've been able to open two more classrooms in one center that only had, you know, very minimal classrooms, and I'm almost to full capacity in that center. Well, they had maybe 20 kids.
Wow.
And its capacity is 119.
Wow. Yeah, we have seen also a big increase in centers changing their capacity over the last several months.
Oh, right.
I think more so than we've seen historically. So we're also looking to kind of see, is enrollment keeping pace with what people have updated capacity to be, or is capacity really high but enrollment kind of stagnant, just to kind of give us a better sense of the landscape.
A few months ago, when the first started capacity increases, we're like, oh, this is really about stabilizing our current workforce. Is it really about growing? But then we talked to licensing and said, this happens so rarely but that has not been the case in the last 6 months. This is not a rare incident for capacities to be increasing. And so we are really curious about how that affects enrollments and serving more children.
Cool. No other questions? Okay, thank you, Kathy. And then we're going to move right on to Joelle and her CCQS report.
Hi, everybody. I'm always so happy to see people in real life. It warms my heart so much. Well, we have been moving along in CCQS. We haven't had a lot of new centers apply during the summer. Some of them are waiting for the fall. So most of the center data, it hasn't changed a lot. We did rate 7 programs that were observed in May. So then our new numbers and percentages are here. Our largest percentage is foundation of quality, and building and high quality are about the same at 24%. And then we still are at 4 high quality plus programs. This data is no different than it was the last meeting. And that's because in order for this to change, we have to have observed people that we have observed before. And in the last couple of months, we haven't observed any programs that we had already observed. So this data will start changing, though, because right now, anybody that had observations last September that doesn't want their rating to lapse will have to apply this month for renewal. So we've had six applications from folks that already have a rating. We have one new application for September. Usually things happen at the end of the month, when the deadlines come. So I imagine of those 16, I would predict that all of them will apply. Next slide, please, Montana. So family child care, I don't have a data slide because it would be the exact same data. It was just how many people had applied. We have started the official observations. We observed 25 family child care programs last month, and they will get their ratings August 1st. So this is exciting. 21 out of the 25 scored the high quality score needed for the observation component. So if during their actual scoring, if they have enough points on the actual framework piece, we could have 21 high quality family providers. It's possible, but we won't know until they actually go through the scoring process. So that is pretty exciting. I hope we're working on getting all our data together. The one nice thing for family child care that was not able to happen for centers due to the pandemic was we were able to put out support programs before the ratings. So there were several of them that were in the peer learning communities that we did virtually during the pandemic. And last year, when we were able to get back into programs, we needed programs to practice that. So we gave them the opportunity to have an observation to see where they were at. So many people got kind of practice observations that then were accompanied with feedback. So I want to believe, of course, that that work helped, helped people be able to reach it. That would make sense to me. But we're kind of collecting the data to see of these that scored the high quality score, were they in a PLC, did they have a practice observation, how many, but that all has to kind of be done by hand. So it takes some time. But yeah, their official ratings will be posted August 1st, and those that do receive the high quality or high quality plus rating, we do have some that scored the high quality plus mark as well. So that's really exciting. We had a nice handful that scored over a 5. That's amazing. That is amazing.
That's awesome.
Yes. They'll start getting the enhanced subsidy payment in August, those that hit the mark when they're scored. So that'll be really exciting. We're currently doing July programs. We have 15 observations scheduled for this month. I think we've done about 6. I looked this morning. And the majority of them also hit the high quality score. Wow. So they're doing very, very well. Family child care is doing very, very well. So I think that's really exciting. Next slide. We've also done a lot of work for our intensive support program. So in order to be able to apply for the intensive coaching, Betsy has been the person readying that on our team. A program had to have a certified rating. If they were certified foundation, they had to have scored 60 points on the actual framework to be eligible to apply for that, or they had to have building quality rating. So we've had 73 centers that have a certified foundation or building. 46 were eligible to apply. I need to restate that. It just occurred to me. In order to be able to apply, you had to attend an informational meeting. So we had 2 meetings. One was during the day, and one was in the evening, and people could register. So in order to be able to apply, they had to attend the meeting. We wanted to make sure that people know, if you do this, this is what it is, because it's intense. We've never done anything this
intensive
before. yeah, never have. So we wanted to make sure that they understood the administrative commitment and that there's going to be someone in your program often. In the past, their workloads were so high that in our other grants, they might have somebody come in to provide technical assistance. Not even once a month, usually. But with this grant, they'll be in often. And so we just want to make sure that people knew. So we had 46 eligible to attend the meeting, is what it should say. 30 programs registered for the 2 meetings, 25 attended. So 25 people were sent the application. So we have 25 centers eligible to apply. So we're still accepting those applications. The deadline is this Friday at 5 p.m. And right now, I think we have 6, which is, like I said, really normal. I imagine Friday at 5 p.m. Yeah, but it's a hard cutoff. So if they don't get it in by 5 p.m., it won't be accepted. You have to have it in by 5 p.m. So, and then we have a rubric that we'll be using to determine the programs that will be served in each region. The rubric will be applied regionally. So like St. George programs are not competing with Salt Lake programs. Peggy's region, they have their own, you know, every region has, they're not compared with other regions. So, so those that score the highest on the rubric will be selected and will go up to our capacity and the number of programs, number of classrooms we can serve. So, yeah, and all of that is done with data. It's all done with data we have at our office, so that people don't have to spend a million hours writing a big proposal and then maybe not even get funded. So, we're hoping I think it eliminates a lot of challenges for a lot of people. So those that are selected will actually enter into a contract with OCC, and they will receive the intensive on-site coaching. We're using the practice-based coaching model, or we will also be able to serve 6 additional programs that don't get into intensive coaching in a peer learning community. So they'll have that opportunity as well if they don't get into the intensive coaching. So I imagine because we only had 25 apply that we're going to, I don't think we're going to have capacity to serve all 25, but we'll be able to serve a higher percentage of who applied than I originally anticipated. So, yes, that makes me happy. But yeah, we've been doing a lot of work with our Care About Child Care folks, our early childhood specialists, and the coaches are super excited, super excited. So, any questions? Okay, well, nice to see y'all. 2 months. In person, I'll get to see your face again. Okay.
Thank you. And so we're going to move on to Megan with branch updates.
As always, I don't have as much information as Joellen has, but I'm hoping that this information really appeals to you all. So I'm giving you an update in regards to our grants that we had last year and comparison to the grants that we're moving forward into our new school year. This is our school readiness initiative, so this encompasses our becoming high quality as well as our expanded student access grants. You can see that school year 21-22 for becoming high quality, we had funded 6 organizations and 1 LEA and 25 classrooms with a total of $540,000. This year, you can see that we've doubled that, as well as increased our funding for our Becoming High Quality programs, which is really exciting. For expanded student access, you can see that the numbers are pretty similar as far as the number of funding, but we have gone down in the number of students. So then that means the amount of funding that we have for expanded student access has gone down a little bit. So we're still sitting about that $11 million mark for our school readiness initiative. But we've put a little bit more money into our Becoming High Quality because we do want them to be able to move from that Becoming High Quality and expanded student access, and we know that funds help increase quality. So that's what we're looking at here. And then just down here below is the school readiness team. This is everybody who goes in to support the work that we do in school and for the school readiness initiative. So you can see that we have somebody who's represented from DWS. We have a few partners from USBE as well as the Children's Center to make all this happen, to include observations and the grants writing and the grant scoring. So those are the ones that really help push everything through for the school year. Next slide.
Oh, I have a quick question.
Yeah.
About the numbers on that last slide.
Sure.
Just a math question.
Right.
I should really understand how all this funding works. But for school year 22-23, mm-hmm. upcoming, where we're serving 2,125 students, mm-hmm. and it's almost 10 million. Mm-hmm. So we had a drop of about 600 students, but it's only about $1 million less. So, like, what is the baseline cost that doesn't change? Because that's a lot of extra kids to cover for just an extra million.
So there wasn't a base that they had to choose from. They essentially created a grant of their own funding.
Oh, I meant like, is there something that we're spending money on from the school readiness team, like evaluations and stuff, like that our expenses don't change no matter how many kids there are?
I would say that the team itself obviously is part of all of the expenses that come out of there. But if you're looking at this in essentials, this is going to be each program. So each program as to what does it cost them to do. This isn't our cost as the office and any sort of administrative work that's done. So this is all programmatic cost.
Okay.
So if we're looking at that, you're looking at the teachers, the cost of getting the teachers trained, what do they need for classroom materials and those such things. And so we've allowed for increases in specific areas to also help with the increase of inflation and cost of those classrooms.
Gotcha. I was going to say, that's a pretty big jump in cost per child. But we're allowing
them to add a little bit more in now because before we weren't able to,
and now
we can increase it just a little bit more to increase that quality just a little bit more.
That's
right?
Fantastic. And it's like closer to a WPU, so that makes a lot of sense.
Yep. Any other questions before I go into the next one? We're good?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, sure.
We got a text to say, like, to answer that, and I think you covered it, that we had some expansion. We allowed them to expand teacher salaries and that type of stuff.
I'm a big fan of paying more for kids.
Absolutely.
Can I just add one more clarification? So we don't set a cost per child.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was just back to that.
We have seen it vary from $300 per child for certain CBOs and up to LEAs spending $3,000 a child. Mm-hmm. So it really does vary on the program itself.
Gotcha. Yeah. Thank you for that clarification. I was just doing my own math there.
Okay. And then this is our out-of-school time information. So you can see school year 21-22, we funded a total of 65 contracts with 154 programs. That's $7 million. This year for school year of 2023, we have reduced the number of contracts but stay close to the same number of program sites with the combination of bringing some grants together. So the After School Match Partnership and the School Age Quality Grant, we combined those to make a giant pot of funding just to make it a little bit easier on our grantees to be able to access the funds. And so you can see that kind of increased there. But we've also increased our amount here from $7 million to $12 million. And what's really good about this is our School Age Quality Grant encompasses our match program, which allows us to draw down more dollars, more federal dollars. And previously, we were only drawing in about $3 million for match. With our new School Age Quality Grant, we're drawing in close to $9 million for match, which means that we can pull down more money, which is awesome. Then the one thing that a lot of you might be familiar with is our School Age Summer Quality Expansion Grant. We have funded 94 organizations, 149 program sites for the summer at $5.5 million, and then we'll expand that to next year to all of those programs next year. So they have 2 years of funding for summer expansion programs. And then this is our team that's there.
That summer expansion was with CURSA funding,
yes.
And so we did a two-year application to be able to spend the summer.
We could extend at least $10 million in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. So
that's been extremely helpful by the way for summer programs. The kids have had amazing time.
We've had a lot of great stories coming out.
Awesome.
One of the requirements that probably you can talk about, Jody, is our SEL curriculum that we've brought in, that we've asked that programs bring into. And I had one of my specialists go out the other day, and she was visiting the programs, and she said she saw the SEL curriculum in action. What happened is they're using this curriculum that has a comparison of emotions to volcanoes and talking about, like, being dormant and being, like, very active and such. And this one kid, she said he was probably about second grade, came up to the teacher and it was like, oh, so-and-so is really getting to be really active right now, and we need to really help him get settled down and be more dormant. And it was just so great because you could see the language that they're utilizing in the space just for that emotional appeasement for them is really connecting to them. So I think even us putting that in there really helps us kind of focus a little bit more on that whole child initiative, which we're really hoping to strive for, right? Are we drawing down the full CCF amount? Are there still funds that require? There are still funds. I think we're sitting at $27 million that we need to look at 2024 match, so that comes out to be about $12 million. But you can see we have about $9 million that's here already, so the rest of it will come from our kindergarten match programs as well as preschool.
Can I add to that?
Yeah.
We have been pulling down the full amount throughout the years. We got an ongoing increase through ARPA in match that was more, and so for going forward, we needed to be able to pull down more funding. So we have done in the past. We have more that we are trying to build towards to be able to pull down.
Yeah, previously in the past, we've been sitting at about $15 million for that with a $5 million match, and now they've increased it to $27 with a $12 million match. So that's where we've been able to do this.
Is that summer of 2021?
Yeah,
so last summer?
Sorry, that would be this summer. That would be
okay.
My bad.
We did that last summer. That summer.
Yeah.
I figured school year, it's hard for me to figure out how
it's
dating.
It really is. It's school year encompassment.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yep.
Thank you, Megan.
All right, any other questions? Okay.
Right on out the door.
No, I think she's out of here. Why if she's competing with you, Joellen, she's really right there. So we're going to move on to Heather with professional development.
I mostly just have a curriculum update today. We have lots of new curriculum coming out that's going to be available to people, so that's exciting. We have partnered with Early Ed U to put out some credit-bearing, college credit courses with our Early Ed U collaboration, but they also have some modules that they have put out that can be used for just continuing professional development and regular clock hours that are similar to some of the things that they put into their college credit courses. They're 3.5 hours each, and so we piloted those first three on the list there with some of our Care About Child Care agencies across the state, and those went very well, and so we opened up a couple other ones that we felt like really expanded our curriculum and had some different topic areas that we didn't cover in other courses or were in a different amount of time, right, a smaller bite-sized course. So we're really excited to be able to roll those out, and those should be able to be offered and put on our course calendar now, so that's great. We also have a new school-age course based on the school-age program quality assessment. That's 10 clock hours. It's called School-Age Teacher-Youth Interactions, and so that is also out there and available to be scheduled by our Care About Child Care agencies. And then upcoming, we have some CCQS-related courses that are coming out as well. The CCQS from Application to Award for Family Child Care will be available for people to take who are interested in learning more about the child care quality system. And then also along with the CCQS intensive coaching, there's going to be a course called Goal Setting for Lasting Change that will be a part of that intensive coaching experience as people are creating their goals for their quality improvement plan within that system. But we also will plan to offer that outside of the intensive coaching as well for setting goals within their programs. So that's all I have. Any questions? Okay.
Well, that's the other. Any questions? Hey, Megan, before you sit down, we have just a little extra question.
Okay. So did these new grant dollars get us to the rest of the new ARPA match? I don't know. ARPA match?
With the additional ARPA funding we had that required the match. So, Johnny, the match is really difficult. It would probably be better to have someone from our finance team come and talk about that. But the match program that Megan talked about is not the only way that we have match. We also get it through subsidy and also through some of our partnerships with USBE. And so, Johnny, I don't know if I'm answering your question exactly, but it would probably benefit, like the match is really complicated, to have our finance, Keisha, our finance manager, come and talk about that for future. Would that be helpful?
I think so. Yeah, the reason I keep asking is I just had a legislator contact me earlier this week with an idea of something that might, you know, help draw down match. And I knew that in the past we've been drawing down the full match, but I know in a previous conversation with you, you kind of told me there was going to be more match money available. So I just didn't know if we had accessed it all or not yet.
Yeah. So, and I remember, like, last time we had about 70-75% of total match that we were able to actually meet. But now I think we're able to really get up there a little bit further.
Yep.
I'm curious, just like knowing that we're coming to the end of the free-flowing COVID dollars, I want to know that we are not leaving money on the table. And if the state of Utah needs to appropriate some money toward any of these programs that we've talked about, and then we can access matching funds from the federal government, I mean, that's like right there funding.
Yep.
Right, and I think I would be very curious about that, Rebecca, if she's willing to come and talk to us about it.
Yeah.
I don't want to leave free money floating out there. Some way we can get it into our sector.
Yep, and then like I said, there's some nuances with the match about a certain type of service can only count a certain percentage, and so I think we could ask for that to be an agenda item in a future meeting.
That would be great.
And then we have a question for Heather.
Yeah.
Can you
about state defensive driving course be counted towards professional development hours specifically for drivers in our program? I would have to look into that. I don't know. I can't make an answer call on that bit on the spot.
So if somebody has like an idea or something, I mean, who do they reach out to with that?
I think she's already reached out to me about that.
Oh, okay. Jamie. Okay. Thank you. So, Anne.
I don't have any slides. I just have a quick update from the last month, so it'll be short. But last time I announced that we were going to start paying for registration fees or subsidizing a portion of the registration fees for providers, and also adding commercial preschool, recognizing them as a new provider type. I'm happy that those changes are still on schedule. and the registration fee goes into effect August 1st, and providers were notified of that yesterday through an email from our office. The provider portal will be updated with some enhancements so that you can actually see the registrations that are paid out per child. That programming will not be completed probably until the middle of August. But there are other ways that providers can verify that information, and that was also included in that email yesterday. I just wanted to give everybody that update. Any questions? Yeah.
I'm embarrassed to admit I can't forget if we do this on a regular basis. But I can't remember the last time we had an update on how many subsidies are being given and how many kids it's covering. That would be really good to know, especially like compared to 2019, right, before all of the new funding. So with the expanded eligibility criteria, you know, how much more are we putting into subsidies? How many more families are accessing them? And I would be curious to know between the like 65% of state median income and the 85% of state median income, how many people have we actually had taking advantage in that new window? So that's a lot of data requests, sorry, Anne. But
okay.
I think it's to your point about enrollment, and like I would be really interested to know, like when we open it up, how many more people take advantage of it so that we can, again, get a sense of the true need out there.
Sure. Yeah, I'm glad to give an update on that next time.
And then I just had a question. I'm sure you guys are addressing it, but I've wondered, I'm assuming that we always are kind of looking at if it's possible to expand the eligibility access to it, but I'm just
hearing from a lot of, you know, inflation's hitting everybody, and I'm wondering if, I'm assuming that we're realizing that we're probably going to have to look at that again soon, right?
Well, as far as our, I guess there's two different things that come to my mind with based on what you just said. So effective October 1, we always update our income thresholds to stay current with the most recent federal poverty limits and state median income. And so that table changes is being made effective October 1. So that might make potentially some more families eligible for SUBG. So we'll, you know, have that available. We'll probably post that on our internet by the end of August, so that that'll be available for everyone. And then the other thought that came to mind was the subsidy rate, and you know, our rates are currently set on the based on the last market rate study that was done in 2021. And so there's a lot of factors again talking about what happens when the COVID funds go away and where is that going to leave us. And Rebecca can speak to that, but that we weren't planning to increase our subsidy rates at this time. Just because of so many unknowns in the future.
The other thing, bad news, good news. Good news, if you remember, during the start of COVID, we increased our income limit up to 85% statement income. That is the federal maximum. And so I went there when you were thinking about that. Like, good news, we're there. Bad news is we can't increase that because that is the federal maximum.
I would like to point out, in New Mexico, they have raised their rate up to, 150% of state median income. They take their federal dollars up to 85%, and then the state actually invests in supporting others. So, again,
yes.
Not Rebecca's job,
but
I want to say,
that is the pathway to increase the...
That's right. There are ways for us to contemplate, how could we doing more to help those families that Holly's talking about, and if we are willing to step up as a state government, that is a potentiality.
Yeah. Any other questions?
No more questions.
Okay.
Thank you. Great. So we get to move right on to our agency update. So we're going to start with Simone with child care licensing.
There he is. I'll let him take it.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, thank you. Okay, really quick. You probably are aware of the merger between the Department of Health and the Department of Human Services. Now we are...
I've heard a rumor about that.
Yes. Yeah, it's been spoken by many people. So we are one department now. Now, what I wanted you to know is that this doesn't change anything for child care licensing. I will continue to be working with child care licensing. Actually, we have... In our Office of Child Licensing, we have children ages 0 through 110. So we'll be working with every single child in the state. Our vulnerable populations are under our radar, including child care licensing. So no changes for child care licensing that will affect the child care licensing world. That's all you to know. And another piece of information that is important for people to know, we have the suicide crisis prevention federal number and state number. It's good for people to know that the number is being simplified to 988. This number will be available and accessible to everyone starting July 17. So whenever there is a person with a crisis, they can call 988 and they will be directed to a professional who will help them during that crisis. I think that's great news for everyone since we are having so many mental health issues in this world. Okay, that's all the report I had. Any questions for me?
Great.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Simone. Okay, so Jared, it's your turn with USBE.
Okay, great. Thank you. I do have a few updates here. First off, you know, since there's various programs that USDE works with the after-school programs and others, we'll start with the after-school programs. There's not a whole lot of new things coming in the pipeline right here, but I just wanted to bring to everybody's attention that for the American Rescue Plan Act After School and Summer Grant program, the orientation will be held in September. So if you're a program that has applied for those and received those, you'll be receiving information about that orientation soon. There's the anticipation that there will be another cohort of the intergenerational poverty and the program quality enhancement grants that will be released this coming year, although there's no date yet for when that next cohort will begin. But if your program is in a situation where these grants would apply to you, please watch for that. And in future updates, I'm sure I'll be, when I find out when those dates will be, I'll bring that to the committee here. Finally here, as far as after-school programs, the 21st Century Grant Program, the next round of applications for that grant program will be in February and March, and so I'm sure there will be more information as we're coming up to that time period. So those are the after-school program updates. Montana, can we go to the next slide for the CACFP? Thanks. So for CACFP, the USDA Food and Nutrition Program has been working hard to address the infant formula shortage. I have the website here on this slide, and it's also in your meeting materials, which links to a question and answer page as far as information about the shortage, information about finding and connecting with sources for formula. If your program uses formula in your program. Another update here, the No Kids Hungry Free Meal Finder service has a new text number. The old text number was 877-877, which it's undergoing the transition now. If people text that number to find out where free meals are available, such as with the summer meal program, they'll still be rerouted to this new number, but going forward, the text number is 304-304. People can just text food or comida to that number to be connected with free meal services in the area. Finally here for CACFP, some exciting news. The federal legislation, Keep the Kids Fed Act, was signed at the end of June, and what this will do, and this will impact a lot of child care programs, there's an additional reimbursement of 10 cents for all qualifying meals during the 22-23 school year, and this also applies to family daycare homes as well as Tier 2 homes. They'll be considered as Tier 1 homes for the 22-23 school year as far as for meal reimbursement for CACFP program. And let's go ahead to the next one. Next slide. Some preschool updates. We're working with the people from the UEN, Utah Education Network, on updating the media hub on the Preschool Path website. That's at preschool.uen.org. Currently, there's information for parents of preschoolers, for preschool providers, preschool professionals. It's been a tremendous resource. It continues to be a tremendous resource. That's where you can access the early learning standards as well as the strategies and activities for each of the early learning standards. We're in the process of updating those, working with UEN to connect with additional materials and additional resources. And so watch for that being rolled out for the updated media hub on the UEN preschool page coming this fall. The Early Learning Standards Family Resource Guide, I talked about this last time, and there's questions about when that will be rolled out. Here on this slide, there's a screenshot of what this guide will look like. Basically, it helps to communicate to parents and families what the core skills are in the early learning standards, as well as provides information about some recommended activities that parents can do. There's a question about when this will be rolled out. Currently, it's going under ADA compliance review, so it should be once that's completed, it should be released very soon. Those will be available on the USVE preschool website, and most likely as we're updating the USVE, the UEN Media Hub, there'll be connections to that there too. In previous updates, I talked about the SII, the Standards Implementation Institute, that was to be held this summer due to low enrollment. These trainings were canceled, but there's some really good information and really beneficial supports for teachers in the classroom for implementing the standards, and so we will be converting these trainings that would have been delivered in person this summer to asynchronous Canvas courses that will also be rolling out this fall. The final update that I have is, as many of you may know, the preschool specialist at USBE, Jessica Mackley, she's been the senior preschool specialist with over 4 years of experience. She's leaving to go back to the classroom. And so we have just recently, this week, we've interviewed some people and we've found a really good candidate that we've offered. And so next time I'll be able to announce who that is. But just an update just for you to know that Jessica Mackley will no longer be at USBE, but we're looking forward to seeing the success she has as she returns to the classroom this fall. So that's all the updates I have. Does anyone have any questions about the USBE updates? It's kind of a whirlwind, a lot of information in a short amount of time, but that's the updates that I have.
Thanks, Jared. It doesn't look like we have any questions for you. I have a comment. Okay. Oh, we have a comment. Jared, I just appreciate the information about the food update. I think that's super helpful for this group.
Yeah, I'll remember to do the after-school updates and the CACFP going forward. It was brought to my attention. It's like, oh, there's a lot more that USDE does besides just preschool, but I'm just in my own little, narrow focus here. It's like, oh, yeah, that would be good to update too. If there's any other information from other USDE programs that people would like to add in future updates, please let me know.
Okay. Thank you, Jared. Okay, so we're coming closer to the end. From the committee, I'd like to ask if there is any other business or anything that they want to bring up right now.
I'm curious about HB 15, if you have any updates on that.
No.
Okay.
Planning in progress.
Great. Yay. Specifically, issue 15, you're talking about like the startup grants with employers and providers.
Yeah.
We talked internally with some of my management team about how to roll that out and how to operationalize that. We have a couple ideas that I'm not ready to share yet because I haven't flushed it out or got approval.
Do you know with that, are there any additional, was there any way to increase the startup grants for licensed providers?
It's not appropriate any money, but it did ask to use some of our COVID relief funding for some of those grants. And the way that that bill was written, there was like the connection with the employer, with the provider, then also talked more generally about startup grants. So I'm curious what your...
I thought that we was going to try to work out some way to increase the startup grants. But
the amount really, or the...
Yeah, the amount that providers could use to start up their programs. But I realized, too, we never really...
No, I think we can connect and we can talk about where you think that gap is and the need is.
Okay.
Great. Do we have any public comments?
I think Jamie has her hand raised.
Oh, Jamie.
My hand must be still raised from before. I should have put it down. Sorry.
No worries. I love the laugh. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, if there's no comment or anything, it is now. It is not 2:00. It is 3:00. I'm looking at the front. ask for a motion to dismiss.
I'll motion.
Jody, thank you. Second it. Great. Everybody have a great rest of December because it'll be September when we come back together again. I know.
Yeah. No. Yeah.